This morning, we're going to be looking at the next of the seven signs we're going through in the talks on Sundays at this time. Seven signs found in John's Gospel. And today we're looking at the third of those around the healing of the man at the pool of Bethesda, or Bethsaida, depending on which version of the Bible translation, which translation you're looking at. So they're signs. Signs of what? Well, just to remind us, they're signs that John wants to say are pointing towards who Jesus is, first of all, primarily. And there's lots in this story and in what follows just after the actual healing that talks a lot about who Jesus is. But more than that, they're also signposts, we believe, that point towards the new life that Jesus came to make possible for each of us, life in God's kingdom. So as we look at these signposts, as we look at the stories, we can also kind of see what is there in the story, in the way Jesus responds, the attitudes he has and so on, that can really help us in terms of what we can and should be like. And as I read this story several times, preparing as you do, there was just this phrase that came into my mind that I think is like a thread that runs through it. It's not necessarily an obvious thread when you first look at it, but it really stood out to me. And it's this, and I'm going to say this phrase over and over again. Law looks at the problem. Love looks at the answer. Law looks at the problem. Love looks at the answer. So, how's that worked out in the story? Well, we're going to be hearing the story in segments as we go through. But first of all, a bit of background. We're given quite a lot of detail about where this event took place. It's at the Pool of Bethesda. It's a well-known place of healing. It was in Jerusalem itself. And if you could travel to Israel now, you could go and see. It's been unearthed, it's been excavated, and you could actually go and see the place that this miracle took place. So let's hear the first part of the story. Over to you, Matt.
Afterward, Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy holidays. And inside the city, near the Sheep Gate, was the Pool of Bethesda, with five covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. One of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him and knew he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, "Would you like to get well?" "I can't, sir," the sick man said, "for I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me."
So here we are at the Pool of Bethesda, or Bethsaida. The name in Hebrew literally means house of mercy, house of loving kindness. And it's borne out, you know, we're told this is a place of mercy. It's a place of healing. Apparently, it's a place that people come to in their desperation. And scholars, as well as archaeologists having unearthed the place, they've also found evidence that it wasn't just a place of healing for the Jews. The evidence suggests it was also used by pagans, and it was perhaps dedicated to the Greek god of medicine and doctors. I'm going to struggle with this. Asclepius, I think. Now, depending on what version of the Bible you want to read John's Gospel in yourself, you may or may not have a verse 4 in chapter 5. It's omitted from most modern translations because apparently it's not included in the earliest and most reliable documents, and there may be reasons for that we'll come to in a moment. But if you do have that verse 4, it explains that apparently the time of healing came when an angel came and disturbed the waters so it bubbled up. And even if you haven't got that verse, we got a reference to it, didn't we? And what the man says in his reply to Jesus. He says he's been sitting at the pool for 38 years and he hasn't been healed because he hasn't got a friend to help him into the pool when the water bubbles up. Now, this might just be me, but honesty moment, that all sounds a bit weird. Maybe it does sound a bit weird to you. It sounds a little bit weird to me. It certainly doesn't, you know, I've been to various seminars and workshops on Christian healing over the years, and none of it sounds like a bit of classic good Christian doctrine for how you get healed. In fact, if anything, if I'm really honest, with all the talk of angels and all the rest of it, not that I don't believe in angels, but with that emphasis, it all sounds a little bit new agey. Maybe that's just me. What is Jesus doing there? I mean, maybe you might expect him to go and repeat the cleansing of the temple thing that John's told us about in chapter 2. Or perhaps he's going to stand up and preach a sermon about how superstitious this place is and how people ought to really look to God. Or perhaps he's going to organise his disciples to form a protest outside to stop people coming in so they're not corrupted in some way. Because that's what we might have done. Well, hopefully not. But anyway, Jesus instead makes a beeline for the guy who's probably been there the longest. He's the most difficult case, maybe. You know, healing ministry, you won't necessarily go for the most difficult case first, but Jesus goes straight over to him and he asks him if he wants to be healed, which is a strange question when you come to think about it, because the guy's been there since before Jesus was born, looking for healing, it would seem. And this is just a bit of an aside, and this probably goes back to something I once heard Johnny Barr teach, for those of you who remember this. But it is possible for us to get so used to the problems that we have that we end up kind of almost or actually finding an identity in those. Maybe don't end up not really wanting to change. So perhaps Jesus was confronting that issue in the man. Whatever the reason, the guy's answer doesn't deter him. More of that in a minute. But let's just go back to where this took place. If we're honest, those of us from any kind of strong evangelical background might have had a problem with being in such a place. But here's the thing. Law looks at the problem. Love looks at the answer. So, my first point, love looks in unlikely places. Love looks in unlikely places. So, maybe that's where we should be. Not judging or condemning, I don't read that from Jesus, but caring, asking questions, and then, yeah, offering answers. What might that mean for me? What might that mean for each one of us? What unlikely places might God call us to? Let's just think about that for a moment. And one more aside, from time to time, and especially unfortunately at this time on social media, I see Christians saying things like, well, broadly speaking, it goes along the lines of, well, it's all very well talking about, and by the way, this is not a reference to something we heard earlier, grace is all very well, but let's not forget the judgment of God. Well, I haven't got time to go into that issue with all the detail it deserves, but just this one little thing. At the end of this story, Jesus speaks at some length about judgment, actually, and he says that judgment has been entrusted to him by the Father. So maybe in stories like the one we're looking at, we get a window into what judgment looks like for Jesus. Let's hear the next part of the story.
Jesus told him, stand up. Pick up your mat and walk. And instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath, so the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, you can't walk on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat. But he replied, the man who healed me told me, pick up your mat and walk.
Now, we could look at the answer that the guy has given to Jesus as being perhaps a little bit less than perfect. Because essentially he's saying this, I haven't been healed because it's all other people's fault. No one's been able to help me. And any proponent of the Lord helps those who help themselves school of theology is going to have a field day with him. And hey, look, I'm putting my hand up. I can be a little bit like that if I'm not careful. And it can be a balancing act. Do we help people who've got no intention of helping themselves, got no intention of changing, making any effort themselves? We do need wisdom, particularly in development work, and that's a whole other talk again. And I do touch on it if you tune into the going deeper thing during the week. But Jesus isn't fazed by the guy's response at all. He simply says, be healed. Get up your mat and walk. Now, actually, there is genius in that because the guy did have to respond. He had to get up. But Jesus didn't wait for him to prove himself first. And maybe the guy was kind of burning some bridges there. If he picked his mat up, who knows? Maybe it was like towels by the pool. Once you picked your mat up, you know, you lost your place. But anyway, the man is healed and he didn't need to sign up to any kind of correct statement of doctrine first. In fact, as we find out later on, he doesn't even know who Jesus is. Remember, law looks at the problem. Love looks at the answer. So love looks at the heart. Love looks at the heart. Jesus knew what the man wanted about above all other things, knew what his deepest desire really was, and he was happy to meet that deepest longing. Later, he does address some issues. We'll come back to that, but not first. So again, what about us? What about me? What about you, Andy? How good are we at looking at people's hearts and desires, going kind of beyond, behind the obvious, and actually asking for wisdom about what actually is in their heart? Or do we wait until they've made a good enough response or believe the correct things first? Something else to think about as we hear the last part of the story.
Well, who said such a thing as that? They demanded. And the man didn't know. But Jesus had disappeared into the crowd. But afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and told him, now you are well, so stop sinning, or something even worse may happen to you. And then the man went and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had healed him. So the Jewish leaders began harassing Jesus for breaking the Sabbath rules.
So, Act 3 of the story, and to quote that well-known phrase from A Question of Sport, what happens next? What happens after the man is healed? And what immediately happens is one of those occasions where things are pushed so much to the limit, it's almost like a scene from a sitcom, really. If you wanted a script to illustrate the attitude of at least a proportion of the Pharisees to Jesus' ministry throughout his time on earth, this one scene would be a kind of snapshot that sums it all up. Here's a man who's been at the Pool of Bethesda for 38 years. He's virtually a local landmark. I would think everyone in Jerusalem and the surrounding area probably either knew him or knew about him. And now he is up and walking around. It is an amazing miracle. And whatever else I'm kind of extracting from this story, let's not forget that one simple central truth. This man is healed. It is amazing. And what the religious leaders want to take issue with is the fact that he is technically breaking the law as it was seen at the time, because technically he is working on the Sabbath by carrying his own mat. And the truth was, technically, they had him banged to rights. Technically, he was breaking the law. And perhaps understandably, when he's challenged, the guy responds with a kind of response that is as old as scripture itself, because it's basically the response that Adam gives in the garden, and it's as modern as this century right now, because it's the sort of response I have given, and I wonder if some of you have. It's not my fault, someone else told me to do it. As I said earlier, the guy doesn't even know who Jesus is. But later, Jesus finds him. Jesus is good at finding people, isn't he? It's kind of, well, Luke 19 verse 10 says it's kind of in his job description. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And he finds this guy. And he also found me. And for many of you watching this, he's found you. Not just once, he goes on finding us, doesn't he, when we try and hide. And when he finds him, he then does seek to address not just the immediate, but the guy's long-term needs. And my paraphrase of what he says is, now, okay, you're healed. Now, basically, sort your life out so things don't get even worse for you. So, is he saying that because the guy was disabled because of sin? Well, personally, I don't think so. Certainly not in terms of any kind of judgment. Obviously, there are things we can do, wrong things, which can end up affecting our health. There are kind of the law of cause and effect does take place in our bodies. But I don't think Jesus is talking about judgment on him personally. Maybe Jesus did know a thing or two about the guy. Like I said, I'm sure he was well known. Perhaps he wasn't particularly pleasant if you walked past him. Perhaps he was abusive. I don't know. Maybe Jesus was simply saying, you've been stuck by the pool for 38 years. Now your horizons are very broad. Make sure you do the right thing with your life. And I tend to think maybe that's what Jesus is saying. Jesus sees the possibility of a great future for this guy, one not bounded by his past, and he didn't lecture him, he simply encouraged him to make sure he's going to continue in a good way. Law might have looked at the problems which might have ensued and might have tried to put all sorts of restrictions around the guy, but love looks at the answer, so love looked at potential. And in seeing potential in the man, Jesus wanted the best for him, so he didn't back away from, in the words of Paul in Ephesians 4, speaking the truth in love. And I just want to say something about that very quickly. I was reminded during the week when I was telling my story to somebody that Lina and I came here to this church really as a direct response of some truth being spoken to us, prophetically in that case. And one of the key things was said to me that I needed to go somewhere where I could be built into a body of believers and have the corners knocked off me. And that happened. We came here. I really wanted to respond to that. I knew that needed to happen. Some might say there's still quite a lot of corners waiting to be smoothed off, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. But that process was to do with people speaking the truth in love to me. And I'm not talking about control, I'm not talking about a critical spirit, but let's not lose sight of that, the strength of that, as we look to help each other, wanting the best for each other. Jesus didn't write the guy off. He didn't get offended because he'd been blamed to the religious authorities by him. How will we see the best potential in people and help them towards that lovingly? So, the law looks at the problem, love looks at the answer, in unusual places, in people's hearts, in their potential. How can I work that out? How can we work that out with people this week? Let's just be quiet for a moment, and then I'm going to pray. Father, I thank you that you work from a place of loving kindness, a place of mercy in our lives. Lord, thank you for the potential you've seen in each one of us and that you want the best for each one of us. And Father, would you just help us to do that to others and to put ourselves in the places where people are, where they're asking questions, perhaps in places of desperation, places that might not necessarily be comfortable places for us, but Lord, that we would go to those places, be in those situations, so that people can find healing in every part of their lives. In Jesus' name, amen.